Happy trails to you until we meet again.
This is Phil Nee. I hope all your trails are happy until we talk again later on WRCO-FM in Richland Center, Wisconsin. Our news this hour is sponsored by Pamela's Fine Jewelry, a full-service jewelry store featuring a wide variety of styles, beautiful downtown Spring Green, and the Phoenix Center, family fun at its best. There's always something for everyone, including bowling, legendary pizza, along with video games. It's 24 in Richland Center as we hit 9 o'clock.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. In suburban Minneapolis, three first responders killed on Sunday when they tried to stop a domestic dispute. ABC's Alex Perez has more.
We're all grieving, and we're going to do it together.
Police called to the scene about 2 a.m. Sunday, where they say the shooter was barricaded inside with his family, including seven children. After an hours-long standoff, police determining the suspect died by suicide, the children found safe.
Much of the state of California getting hit by one of those atmospheric rivers. It's bringing wind, snow, strong wind. Brief tornadoes are possible today in the Sacramento Valley. The mother of Russian dissident Alexei Navalny says she has been turned down when she tried to get access to her son's body. She's traveled to Siberia near the penal colony where Navalny died, but was denied custody of the remains. Another grim milestone in the Middle East, according to the Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry. More than 29,000 Palestinians have been killed since the start of the Israel-Hamas war. This is ABC News. We're now less than a week from South Carolina's GOP primary, pitting former President Donald Trump against former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley.
Trump's legal troubles may be helping him politically, but they're costing his supporters plenty. Last year, filings showed Trump's political fundraising committee spent more than $50 million on legal bills. He's hawking sneakers and perfume to raise money. His remaining Republican challenger said it should be a wake-up call for the party.
The part I worry about is the RNC is now going to be the piggy bank for Trump's legal fees.
Nikki Haley trails far behind Trump in South Carolina, where the primary is 5 days from now.
That's ABC's Aaron Katursky. Fresh warnings about the potential for Chinese cyber attacks on American infrastructure. The FBI director, Christopher Wray, now saying they have risen to unprecedented levels. And on shelves today, the first new flavor from Coca-Cola in 3 years, Coca-Cola Spiced, available in regular and zero-calorie versions. Coke keeping mum on the exact mix of spices. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
Good morning. This is Pamela at Pamela's Fine Jewelry in beautiful downtown Spring Green. This year, we have an extra day in February. So we at Pamela's will have a one-day sale and feature 29% off on anything in the store for sale. And grab a treat on my birthday, March 1st, and celebrate with me at Pamela's in beautiful downtown Spring Green.
You work hard. Making the right choice for lunch isn't hard. The Phoenix Center opens at 10 Monday through Sunday with all of your lunchtime favorites, burgers, salads, terrific appetizers, specialty sandwiches, wraps, and more. Easy in, easy out. The Phoenix Center is the perfect way to break up the day. Can't get away for lunch? Let the team at the Phoenix Center serve you a great meal tonight, including the world-famous Phoenix Center Pizza. Or call ahead, 649-7469 for carryouts. From the Phoenix Center in Richland Center. The forecast for today calls for a high of 44, partly cloudy and mild conditions. Tonight, a few clouds and chilly, a low of 26. Tuesday, partly sunny and spring-like, a high of 49. And Wednesday, partly sunny and very mild, a high of 54. In Richland Center, it is 25 degrees. Stay tuned for our morning show. It's coming up next.
Dunkin' Reward members can look forward to the fresh offers in the new year, including a $2 medium hot or iced coffee, limit one per member per day. Triple points when boosted members place an order through the mobile app on Wednesdays, and 100 bonus points for all members who place an order through the mobile app on Mondays. Those who aren't Dunkin' Rewards members can sign up for free on the Dunkin' app or by visiting DunkinRewards.com. Get a free medium beverage with your first purchase, so quick sign up and start earning free Dunkin' today. And remember, Richland Center runs on Dunkin'.
Every year, 4.5 million young adults between the ages of 18 and 24 visit the ER.
It's every parent's nightmare.
Umergency gives you all the tools you need to quickly and effectively manage your family's emergency. Umergency provides instant access to vital resources customized to your student's campus and local community, digital consent form, and built-in urgent alert button. Umergency gives you peace of mind when you need it most. Download your Umergency app now.
My baby brother, a father.
Come on, it's time for his nap.
Whoa, he can't sleep on his stomach. Babies should always sleep on their backs in a safety-approved crib, and the sleep area should be clear of blankets, toys, and other loose or soft items. It reduces the risk of SIDS.
SIDS?
You know, sudden infant death syndrome.
Guess I need to start studying up on safe sleep for little man here. Being his favorite uncle comes with big responsibilities.
For more information, visit safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov, sponsored by the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development.
Choosing to bundle your auto and homeowners coverage isn't just convenient, it can save you money. Hi, this is Julie at State Farm. On top of the monthly savings when bundling auto and homeowners, our agency can help you select affordable coverages and price options just for you. It's what we call the personal price plan. How do I start bundling? Well, whether you call, email, or drop by the office, talking to the Julie Karen State Farm team is the first step to discovering how much time, effort, and money you could save by bundling your auto and homeowners coverage. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hi, Travis with Wirtz Floor and Home in Spring Green. Want to give your house a new look? Whether it's one room or a whole house, we can help. From the industry's best Karastan carpet to exceptional hardwood floors by Mirage, or even if it's vinyl plank, we have it. Want a new kitchen or bath? We can help with that too. Quality products and quality service from a company you can trust. Wirtz Floor and Home.
Cowessin Bus Richland Center is currently seeking applicants for full-time daily school bus routes. Starting wage is $20.50 per hour. Paid training is available along with a $1,500 sign-on bonus. It's an excellent opportunity for college students, retirees, and stay-at-home parents. You can bring your kids to work with you. If you enjoy working with children and have a positive attitude, this is an excellent career for you. To apply, call 647-4446 or stop by the Richland Center Cobison Terminal off Highway 14 behind Center Lodge.
Don't miss the annual Driftless Area Deer Classic, Saturday, February 24th from 9 to 5 at the Richland Center Community Center. Bring in your deer head to be entered for a chance to win a gun. Enjoy interesting vendors, bucket and gun raffles, a trail camera photo contest. Sheds are welcome but will not be scored. Come enjoy food and beverages. Admission is just $5, kids 12 and under free. Pre-register Friday night, February 23rd from 5 until 9, or Saturday from 9 until noon. For more information, phone 475-4963. The Driftless Area Deer Classic, Saturday, February 24th at the Richland Center Community Center.
Welcome to the morning show today on WRCO Radio. Representative Tony Kurtz is here, and State Senator Howard Markline joining us on a Monday morning show for their monthly visit. Tony, we were just talking wrestling. I had no idea I was amongst a former, what were you, state champion?
No.
Were you...
good morning, everybody.
Juneau County champion?
No. I did quite well, my senior year was... Got beat by the same kid five times. That's what.
Sometimes that happens too, where they're the same weight class and you see each other all the time. But
now that kid ended up winning two state championships.
Did he?
Two titles, uh-huh. Junior and senior year. Yeah.
Wow, that happens. Did you have any wrestling experience, Howard, or not?
Yeah, but not in school.
In politics.
No, well, out in the barn a few times, my brother and. Sort of thing, but no, I play basketball.
Sure.
I try to play basketball.
Yeah.
It wasn't very
they wouldn't let us wrestle against the basketball team.
No, exactly. What always drove me crazy is that we'd play basketball in Fayette and the wrestlers would beat us, you know? I'm like, hey, how can that be? You know, it's not supposed to happen.
I remember when I was a sophomore and we had the senior class was awesome that year in all sports. I think they only lost like two games in three sports. They were, the wrestlers were practicing and a couple of the senior basketball players went up and started to lift weights and screw around or whatever. And of course, it kind of screws up your shot a little bit, you know, after
yes, it does,
you know, so they won, I think, but they didn't play very as well as they probably should have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a little bit different muscular thing that you use there. So, since the last time we've talked, we've heard a little bit more about the campus community transition grants, Howard.
Yes. And, so that has made its way through the, Joint Finance Committee a couple of weeks ago. Representative Kurtz and I, were able to vote, in it there. And the bill started out when Tony and I first started over this bill. We kept it pretty simple. It was going to be $2 million per county that had a closed campus, close to in-person instruction, pretty wide open and stuff. And the assembly had requested some amendments that we agreed to and approved in joint finance, so which I think they make some sense. They wanted a match. I think it's 20% match. So Richland County would get $2 million, but they'd have to come up with a match. And also would give the Joint Finance Committee some oversight over, like, what projects are being funded with this money. So, and since we talked last time, you know, there's another two-year campus that has announced that their intention to close to in-person instruction, that's Marinette now. So we're up to four for sure that will be closed to in-person instruction. And we've increased the funding in that bill to $20 million to allow for some other campuses that may be announced in the future. So, and I know this legislation is really important to both of us, and Tony on the assembly side has been working incredibly hard to get that thing through in the assembly, and I sure appreciate his effort on that.
Yeah, and the vote for you guys is tomorrow, is that right, Tony?
So the Senate obviously passed it last week.
Yep.
I think it was 26-5. To Senator Mark Lyons' point, in the joint finance, it was a unanimous vote. We'll be taking it up tomorrow on the assembly floor, and I just give a big shout-out to Senator Mark Lyon and his staff and my staff to get this across the finish line. It took a lot of work, but unfortunately, like Howard talked about, you know, we just had another one that's announced that they're going to be closing here shortly, the Marinette. You know, January 30th, the governor was at a press conference. It was like a Wisc politics luncheon, and he even talked about that more possibly could close. So all indications is the governor supports this as well. And so it'll be good for not only Richland County, but also Fond du Lac, Washington, and obviously that Marinette area. And talking about the match, it's something that we were constant contact with the leadership here in Richland County to make sure would not hurt the county. And basically, for a $400 investment, which the county is going to have to put some investment back into the campus as well, in turn, they could have a $2 million grant to help them repurpose that campus. And once again, that is entirely up to the community to have that discussion on what the future is for that beautiful property out there.
So the money has to be used strictly for that, Howard? I mean, can it be used for anything else in the county, or is it just the campus?
It's got to be used for the campus. You know, I mean, the goal of us putting this thing together, and this started months and months ago, as we started talking to county officials here about, you know, what are the possibilities? And in order to transition to, and I don't know what even is on their list at this point, but, you know, there's all kinds of things. You know, it could be housing, it could be maybe demolition of some of those, you know, buildings, but it's going to take some money, you know, to do that. And, you know, and Richland County doesn't have all kinds of cash that they're sitting on here. So the goal was to provide the county, Richland County, but then as well as other counties, some resources, some upfront resources that they could make the investments necessary to repurpose, re-envision what those properties are. But it does have to be used for that site. And, you know, and again, here, I mean, there's a lot of possibilities here in Richland County as to what that might mean. And I'm hopeful. I'm optimistic that, you know, everybody's, you know, disappointed the campus closed to in-person instruction. But that's not going to change. I know there's some people that contact me and say, you got to do something about the campus being closed. It's closed. There's nothing. Every conversation that we have had with UW System, it's a decision they made, and they're not turning back at all. In fact, they're probably going to be accelerating this with some other campuses as well. So, you know, I mean, we need to accept that here. That's unfortunate. And then let's, you know, repurpose that. Let's use our best thinking here to come up with what could be out there. And we've got a little bit of seed money here that could be used to start moving in that direction.
There was a story on last week about the state and accepting students, you know, that are in the top of their class, I believe. And I had to think, and then I think of the top 10% as well. I had to think, Tony, maybe will that help colleges get more numbers and things like that?
I certainly hope so. And that was a bill that, and basically what that does, if you have somebody like here in Richland High School that is in the top 5% of their class, they would automatically have acceptance in UW-Madison. Right now, unfortunately, there are some students that could be the very top, you know, the valedictorian of their class, not get into Madison. And unfortunately, those students go elsewhere. They may go to an Iowa State. They may go to somewhere in Dubuque or Ohio State. Who knows? They're leaving the state. So one of the goals is to keep our best and brightest here in the state. And to your point, if you're in the top 10%, you're guaranteed admission to any type of UW system school. So it could be UW La Crosse, it could be UW Superior, what have you. So that is the goal. Now, just kind of want to piggyback on something that Senator Markline just said about, you know, when you look at the two-year campuses, none of our communities did anything wrong. Richland County didn't do anything. Washington County, Fond du Lac, you know, I keep trying to stress this to people. It is the demographics issue. You know, I've said this before on the program. In 1960, our birth rate was 25 babies for every 1,000 people. Right now, that birth rate is roughly 10 per 1,000 people. So just the sheer numbers. In 2030, we will have the lowest graduating class in the state of Wisconsin. So that's why I think everybody has to realize that we just do not have the graduates like we had 10 years ago, 20 years ago, or 30 years ago. And I think that's why it's so important that we look at the footprint that we have moving forward. And it's not just, you know, UW system. It's a lot of areas that we have to look at. You know, capacity, we have more capacity than we have demand for. That's the bottom line. And to your point, though, Phil, anything we can do to keep our kids in state is a good thing to do.
Dropping down to the high school level, so many districts going to referendum right now, Howard, if not this year, maybe next year. And that's a little concerning as well, isn't it?
Oh, it sure is. And again, you know, it's a function, largely a function of enrollment. Now, like River Valley's, their referendum is for capital. It's for construction. So that's not operational. But the vast majority of the referendums in my district are for operating purposes. And I've listened to the interview that you had with Riverdale, with John Schmidt and stuff. And, you know, every student is about, depends on your district a little bit, but let's say $11,000, $12,000 per student, okay? So you lose, let's say you lose three students, okay, in your district. So that's, what, $33,000, $34,000, $35,000 that your budget has to shrink, okay? Now, it's over a three-year period of time, but the reality is, what costs have shrunk, you know, for your district?
Nothing.
The heat, light, the transportation, yeah. Everything is the same, you know. So, it's incredibly frustrating. And I, we've had listening sessions. You know, we've talked about this and you know, if you're a business manager or district administrator, yeah, you know, how do you manage that? So, it's an issue. And the other thing that I thought John Schmidt really did a good job in your program was talking about the impact that inflation had, because inflation is hitting our K-12 school districts, like they're hitting our families, our businesses, state government. And I thought he did a really good job on your program of explaining that. And, you know, when you're going along at 1.8%, 2%, you know, inflation for a number of years, you know, there may have been some budget issues, but it wasn't like 8%, you know, 7.9% inflation rate that had an incredible impact on our school district. So, you know, it's going to be, you know, somewhere down the line, and I hope that we've got districts that can do more sharing of services, of talent, because I just don't see, especially some of our really small school districts that are in close proximity, I don't see how they're going to be able to have the offerings when you're talking, you know, graduating classes of 17 or 16, you know, pretty small classes and stuff. And it's, you know, it's hard to provide a lot of foreign languages and some of those opportunities to our students when your class sizes are so small. So, and like in Lafayette County, it's a population of less than 17,000 people, and there's seven school districts there, you know, and they're, you know, pretty close to each other. And so I think there's got to be a lot more cooperation with services and, you know, again, specialists and, you know, talent. So, anyway, hopefully, you know, there's a good conversation about that down the road.
I'm sure that a lot of people come to you, Tony, and say, well, we just need, the funding has to be different. The funding has to be changed per pupil and things like that. I'm sure you hear that.
We hear that all the time, and it does come down to funding. But you also have to realize, you know, one of the goals of the state, and this is back in Tommy Thompson, was to be at two-thirds funding. This last budget, we are at two-thirds funding. And so basically what that means is the state picks up, you know, 66.6% of that cost, and then the communities pick up the other third. And, you know, and that's fine if communities, you know, if you decide to have a small school district and that's a community decision, just realize, you know, two-thirds coming from the state, but that other third has to come from the community. And I think that's a discussion, to Senator Markline's point. We need to have a very serious discussion what that looks like moving forward. Like New Lisbon. I know New Lisbon has roughly 500 kids. Between now and I think it's 2028, they're going to lose another 47 children. I mean, they already got it tracked with the number of kids coming in, the number of kids that graduate. And to Howard's point, that is a tremendous hit to the bottom line. And so moving forward, we just have to have a good discussion on what is the footprint moving forward. Like I mentioned earlier, we have a lot of capacity, but we don't have a lot of, you know, people, you know, going into to fill those seats. And so I think we got to have a conversation that it's going to be painful, you know, but it's something I think we need to have. And something that we did in the shared revenue bill, we talked about innovation, consolidation. I mean, I think it's something that the state's going to have to look at to incentivize school districts to do that. And it's going to be very difficult because everybody has different mill rates depending on the community, et cetera. And so it's something that is not going to be easy. And it's going to be something that people are going to be very, it's going to be a tough discussion to have with people.
So. And paying staff too. That's the other thing too. You want to be competitive. You want, you know, good people to be your teachers.
And once again, that all costs money. And to Howard's point, you know, as some of these districts shrink, like a New Lisbon, perhaps they can't do the offerings like they once did. And I don't think that benefits anybody. It doesn't benefit doesn't benefit the kids, and it doesn't fit for the parents. And so that's why I'm saying we just have to have a discussion moving forward on what does the footprint look like for future for K-12.
We have a listener that has called in asking about the Blue River Bridge access. Have you heard about that, Howard? I know they're talking about maybe shutting the bridge down, and I think there's concern in that community for EMTs and police and everybody getting across. So
absolutely. So they've had a public hearing a few weeks ago, a public involvement meeting, and there are a number of people there. Since that time, I've heard from a number of people, and I've contacted some people that weren't at the meeting, Riverdale District Administrator, et cetera. So what people need to do is there's a website or an email that they need to contact the Department of Transportation, okay? And there's a and talk about this project and what it means and the incredible disruption and stuff. So I did some checking. As of Friday, last Friday, the DOT had received only, like, that's my editorial, only 12 comments from people out here. I think I've heard from at least a dozen people. So if people have concern about that bridge closure, when they redo the bridge, they need to contact the DOT. And the email address, the comments should go to Derek, and that's Derek.Potter, P-O-T-T-E-R, at dot.wi.gov. So, and I'll leave this with you for other news broadcasts. But I mean, and I know I listen to your, I do listen to your news, and I heard this morning you're supposed to call my office. Well, you know what? I'm not in the DOT. I really can't do much about it. The DOT is the one that they need to, you know, call. I can register my concerns, but we need to hear from all those people, those fire, EMS, people that just commuting, you know, going to work, district administrators and stuff. So anyway, I just, and I think when the DOT hears of the safety concerns, hears of the what's going on, my guess is they're going to be responsive, to it, and we'll have a good chance of keeping that open. And I, another bridge upriver from, you know, Blue River, of course, is the Lone Rock Bridge, you know, and there was a lot of public input, a lot of concern. What they wanted, you know, we all wanted to make sure that that bridge stayed open, you know, so could crossing the river to go to Dodgeville and, you know, and back and forth, EMS, all those issues. And they listened, and the alignment, at least it influenced a little bit where the alignment was and permitted that bridge on 130 to stay open during the construction period.
It's more costly, though, probably to assemble a bridge beside the existing one, right?
I'm sure it is, you know. But at least I want that conversation to happen. And I've seen the numbers. And I like I said, we just, what's it worth? I mean, if there's only 12 people that have a concern, my guess is the DOT is going to accept the cheaper alternative and shut it down for like 2 years, I think. So, you know, we need more than 12 people to be weighing in on this. And so I just encourage your listeners, anybody that's that will be affected by that bridge closure, to weigh in with the DOT. They're the ones that are going to be accumulating all of the public comments on this. And again, I'll leave this information here for you, so you can use that if you'd like on your future broadcasts.
Sure. I think more weight is carried, where you're talking about a life and death situation, Tony, with Blue River Fire and Rescue and EMTs trying to get to where they need to. So
absolutely. That's why it's so critical to give me your input, because to Howard's point, I guarantee you there's a lot more than 12 out there that have an opinion on how that's going to affect their communities.
Sounds like their meeting was full house, the one that they had recently then. So
yeah,
you're nearing the end of your session. Is that correct?
Yeah, we'll be on the floor on Tuesday and again on Thursday. Now, we're not ending. There'll still be work to do, especially when you talk about the Joint Finance Committee. If we have to, we'll come back probably sometime in March if we do have to come back. But, you know, the big thing is we are toward the end of session. We're going to have a busy floor session on Tuesday and Thursday to get some stuff done. And I know the Senate's going to be in, I think, sometime in March. And then it's going to be back to campaign season for a lot of people.
Hit the ground running. What's the latest? The redistricting, we've been hearing about that a lot in the news. Is that settled, Howard?
Well, it is. Mm-hmm. The governor signed the map, the legislation this morning. So, and And again, and I think you and I maybe talked about this. I'm not sure we talked about it on air or off air the last time we were here. But, you know, it's going to obviously have a big impact on the maps. Under the maps that were the governor signed this morning, the city, Richland, city of Richland Center, and the city, part of the city of Madison will be in the same Senate district.
Okay. And that's a change then.
Oh, a little bit of a change, you know. And you think about, I guess I think about the issues in the city of Madison versus city of Richland Center. I mean, it's just two different worlds. But, I mean, that's the environment we're going to be operating under now. Under every one of the four maps that were still before the court, one of which the governor signed, you know, I've been drawn out of my district. And so, you know, I mean, it's just it's going to be a lot of change, you know, going on, you know, with maps all over. And you know, Tony's district changes a bit. He's not drawn out of his district, but yeah, there's going to be, you know, there's no doubt it's going to be, you know. And I guess from I'm not delighted with the maps, obviously, but I am glad that there is some certainty. People know, you know, what are the maps, you know, because it's kind of hard to say, hey, Phil, do you want to run for office? And you don't even know, I don't even know what district you're going to be in, you know, so that there's certainty which is a good thing. It avoids, I think, a whole lot of litigation, hopefully. And that's not cheap, you know, and I think people are getting sick of litigation at all levels of government. You know, you look and you listen to the news and it's half of it's litigation. Some of this at a federal level, obviously, but I think people are kind of, you know, I know lawyers got to make money, but, you know, there's only so much we can tolerate out here.
So you said your district is going to be different. How does it look?
Well, my the 17th Senate District, which was I was elected to 2 years ago. Was it last year? 2 years ago?
2022. 2 years ago.
Yeah. So we'll now be from, we'll pick up Perdisheen, Waseca, in that area, and then go east, south of the river, into, as far as Oregon, into Dane County. So they pull it, you know, again, very comparable to what they're doing with this Senate district, pulling this district into Madison. My district will get pulled into Dane County.
Okay. Tony, does it affect your area as well?
Oh, quite a bit, yeah. Our area will no longer be in the 17th Senate district. We'll lose Senator Markline as our state senator, and we are now will be in the 14th Senate district, which is currently by Joan Ballwig is her name. And so that district, to Howard's point, it will encompass all of Richland County now. So Richland County, you know, under the old maps, had three state representatives. Now you're only going to have one. It'll be instead of the 50th Assembly District, it's going to be the 41st Assembly District. And to Howard's point, we're going to go all the way from, you know, all the way from Viola to the west side of Madison. So, yeah, it changes. I lose basically the entire Juneau County. It's just the bottom three townships in Juneau County is in this area, and then all of the rest of Juneau County is in a completely different Senate district. So
you will be the representative for Richland County, though.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, right now, yes.
Mm-hmm. So, do you lose where you live, though?
I don't, because they just picked up my township, so I'm still in this area, thank goodness. But, yeah, all the rest of Juneau County is gone. It's actually going to be in the 24th Senate District. Is that Pat, Senator Tessman's?
So, yes. Mm-hmm.
Something certainly out of your hands, right?
It is, and to Senator Markline's point, you know, it just gives us clarity. You know, the other thing I think important here is our clerks who work so very hard on all our elections. Now it gives them time to do what they need to do to marry up their voting precincts with who's going to be in those areas. And before, you know, there's a lot of concerns. It would, you know, if we
the old timeline, it had to be done by March 15th. And to Senator Markline's point, there probably would have been legal challenges. And so you're going to be right up on that April 15th deadline when nomination papers start for all anybody that wants to run. Now we have a little bit more certainty to know, you know, what those districts are going to look like, and gives our clerk some time to prepare.
For the November election.
Absolutely, yeah. Because you got to think, you've got nomination papers that will start on October 15th. Those have to be turned in by June 1st. April 15th, and then turned in by June 1st. And then, obviously, we have a primary in August, and then a general election in November.
Anything else you wanted to add, Howard?
No, I mean, it was clear that the court had was going to do something, and the choices that were in front of us were, none of them were good at all. So they range from what was just signed to things that were even more ridiculous. It is what it is. And, as is often said, elections have consequences. Last year, the Supreme Court election, flipped the majority in the Supreme Court. On August 1st, the new justice was sworn in, and on August 2nd, the lawsuit was filed. So, it's not a shock, I guess. It was December 22nd is when the court said these maps were unconstitutional. Not because they of any partisan issue, because of because they weren't contiguous, And again, they used that contiguous argument as an excuse to open up the whole legal argument over it. So again, it's not shocking, but. Is what it is.
Is it a win for the Democrats, though?
Clearly.
Mm-hmm. Tony, anything else?
No, I agree with Howard. The governor obviously assigned them. This is something that he ran on, that he wanted fair maps. I will say this. I think our area is very purple. The year I got elected in 2018, Senator Baldwin was also on the ballot that year. Senator Baldwin won our district. I turned around and won our district. If something was truly gerrymandered, Senator Baldwin shouldn't have won. And she actually won quite handily in 2018. So I think our area is very purple. And I think people take great pride in voting cross tickets. And you're always going to have somebody that's going to vote Republican no matter what. They're going to vote Democrat no matter what. But I think in our area, there's a lot of people that cross tickets and get quite proud of that, saying they're going to vote for the best person they think that's going to serve their area.
We'll return with more on the morning show today. State Senator Howard Markline, Representative Tony Kurtz are here on a Monday morning.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
The Richland Family Prescription Center's primary function is to fill your prescription accurately and to provide added value services to enhance your health. Filling your prescription is only the first step. Understanding your medication and the importance of compliance will greatly benefit your medication outcome. Whether it's a first-time visit or they've seen you before, the Prescription Center's friendly and knowledgeable staff is dedicated to providing you with a quality pharmacy experience, and they have built their reputation by going the extra mile to ensure your satisfaction. The Richland Family Prescription Center, your one-stop source for all of your prescription and healthcare needs. Your complete customer satisfaction is their top priority.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
Looking for a good career choice? Then check out these reasons for making Pine Valley Community Village your choice for a new job. Starting with reason number 5, reputation. Pine Valley is a 5-star facility. It has served Richland County residents for over 140 years with exceptional care, and now has a new facility to complement this great care. Reputation, one more reason to make working at Pine Valley your choice for a new career.
Join the River Valley baseball team for an Easter egg hunt Saturday, March 30th from 10 a.m. to noon at River Valley Baseball Field, 660 Varsity Boulevard, Spring Green. The egg hunt starts at 10:30, split by age groups 4K and under, kindergarten through second grade, third through fifth grade. Don't forget to bring your own basket. For more information, contact Coach Heinemeier at 608-588-2554. $10 per child includes entry and 10 game tickets. Enjoy food, music, games, prizes, and photos with the Easter Bunny.
Our morning show continues on WRCO Radio. State Senator Howard Markline and Representative Tony Kurtz are here. Tony, we just heard the ad for Richland Family Prescription Center. We understand you kind of at least helped steer in the right direction for Paul to get back and open here recently.
Well, I'm not going to take it. It's just they contacted us, and we just had to make a couple phone calls to Department of Safety and Standardization, you know, DSPS, and you know, I'm just glad it got resolved, and you know, he's given prescriptions out because I know there's a lot of people that rely on his professional expertise and his prescription authority, and I know a lot of nursing homes too as well. And so it's just, you know, Howard and I, we've talked about over the last several years the issues we're having with some of our agencies, and unfortunately some of our agencies, they're still working from home. Some of those personnel, they, in my humble opinion, they need to be back in the office. And we've had a lot of turnover too. We've had a lot of new people coming in doing jobs that they're trained to do, but they might not have that expertise like the person that was before them. And so there's a learning curve that many of them are going through right now.
It's kind of maddening, Howard, for anybody. I think we've talked before in the program about even like nurses and things like that trying to get credentials so they can work. And it's really widespread, isn't it?
It's frustrating. It's just frustrating. And Tony Kurtz and I don't get a phone call right away from somebody when they don't get their credentials, or it's usually after they're frustrated. They've tried every other avenue. They've tried to get a hold of somebody at DSPS, and we're kind of their last resort. They don't, you know who to turn to, and it's just incredibly frustrating. And you know, and then and to Tony's point, it takes a human being sometimes just to look at these situations. And I give you some examples. We got a spreadsheet of people in my district that were waiting on credentials, plan approvals, and you know, things like nurse's license wasn't approved because the you said in your application that you graduated on May 15th, 2022. The registrar's office said you graduated on May 17th, 2022. Dates don't line up, therefore no license. Well, clearly that person graduated with a nursing degree from Madison or wherever, and in May of 2022. Now, whether it was the 15th or the 17th, I don't really care.
Yeah, who cares?
And stuff. So, you know, ultimately they call us. And then we get a hold of somebody, like Representative Kurt said, at DSPS, and we said, hey, listen, what's, you know, and they explained to us, you know, and we had a situation in Reedsburg. This involved an OBGYN that the wasn't getting credentialed, and this person, this doctor, is ready to go to work, okay, and couldn't. And finally, they got a hold of us and said, you know, can you help us out here? So we got a hold of DSPS, and anyway, so and what had happened was they said, DSPS said, well, they didn't pay the $25 application fee. Now, keep in mind, doctors make pretty good money. They make, you know. So $25. So we call the doctor up, we call the hospital up, and they each had paid $25. So I think DSPS had two checks in Madison for $25 and didn't know what to do. So this OBGYN couldn't get credentialed to the practice at Reedsburg. And of course, you know, they again call us, and you know, once we talk to a human being, they get it, and it was resolved instantly and stuff. But there are just so many cases like that that it's just incredibly frustrating. And we had one where the DSPS, we got the email, said, we have all of your required information for your credential, but we can't find it. So here we are, you're trying to get your credential, whatever profession you're in, to start working, And you send everything in, they've got it, and they can't find it. And my chief of staff said, look on the dryer. You know, they're working from home, you know, so anyway. But anyway, and they ended up, you know, finding it apparently. But it's just frustrating. And, you know, working, I don't have a problem with people working from home as long as they're productive and highly effective. But there's some things in business that you need to be in person, you know, to handle things, especially the examples that I gave. That takes communication, and that for a long time wasn't occurring. So hopefully it's improved a little bit, and hope, you know, it's good that, Paul got his license finally. But anyway, it's been frustrating.
Yeah, clearly. We're getting into a new year for agriculture, Tony. What's the outlook like for this year?
Oh, it's all over the board. Yep. I mean, if you talk to the dairy farmers, they are just struggling right now with the milk prices. And, I talked to a pork producer the other day, same thing. Obviously the cattle guys, they're doing pretty well. You know, cattle prices are still good. Commodity prices, not so good for the crop farmers. You know, the only saving grace, I think, right now is, in our area, we had a lot of snow. Though that snow was a nice gradual melt, which I think went all into the ground. I think it's going to build that subsoil moisture, which we really are going to need. I know a lot of farmers right now, I'm chomping on the bit. Yesterday I was working on some equipment, and I don't know. I wish I had a better answer for you. Commodity prices are not good. But the dairy guys, that's what I'm worried about the most, is dairy guys, how much longer they can sustain with these lower prices.
So. Yeah. A drought last summer too, Howard, that hurt a lot of things.
Yeah. And the subsoil moisture, a year ago, I think we had decent subsoil moisture going into the 2023 growing season, which in spite of it being so dry, last year, I was shocked at how well the crops performed last year. But I don't think we've got as much subsoil moisture, so like Tony said, thank goodness this moisture has gone into the ground. There's been no runoff whatsoever, and we need, this is a wonderful weather for us, to get around and not have to shovel this morning and plow snow and all that stuff. But we need the moisture, and between now and May, we can need some moisture to replenish that subsoil moisture.
This is National FFA Week as well. Yep, were you both in FFA?
I was not, but I'm a huge supporter. I mean, just to see the young men and women that, what I get so much joy is when we go to the county fair, and you over the years, now I got elected in 18, but you're seeing these young men and women, you see them grow. And FFA helps them grow, and they do. They become the ag leaders of the future. And I'll tell you, it's a great organization, it's great.
They come visit you in Madison, I think, this week too, don't
yes, they?
Do.
This morning they'll be there at I think at 10 o'clock. They're going to be in my office, so I won't be there to greet them. But I did go to the River Valley FFA breakfast fundraiser yesterday morning. And it's great to support them, and they've got great leadership there. And every one of these FFA chapters that's incredibly successful is driven by an advisor who's passionate about agriculture. And we've got a lot of those people around here, which is great. And the students that I met yesterday were great, and a couple of them came over, and we talked for a little bit, and I told Peggy, I said, these kids, these aren't going to be the problems down the road, in our society. These, their leadership, they're just solid. They're going to be solid citizens in our communities. And interesting, everyone that I talked to yesterday, almost everyone, was a girl, which is neat that we've got a lot of girls that are interested in agriculture, and we're seeing more and more farmers in our district that are, dad might be milking cows, but the business side of things is run by by mom, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's wonderful to see.
We'll have FFA chapters on the next few mornings. River Valley will be here, I think, Weston and Riverdale. So we look forward to that. But interesting now, I've talked to quite a few here in the last year. I've heard a few, hey, I'm going back to the family farm. That kind of warms your heart.
Absolutely. Well, and to Howard's point, I mean, these young folks, I mean, they're going to be the future leaders of agriculture. And, you know, second largest industry in Wisconsin, $105 billion industry. We need them. We need them to step up and fill those shoes moving forward in agriculture to keep our strong agriculture footprint in Wisconsin.
Anything else either of you would like to add this morning about some things going on or coming up?
I wanted to just comment. We've got on the floor tomorrow some bills that that'll be that I authored, which is good to get those near the finish line. There's a bill that the assembly is going to take up tomorrow that doesn't affect either Tony's district or mine, but will have a positive impact on agriculture, speaking of agriculture. And that is there's a Minnesota-based company, CHS, that wants to build a $700 million soybean processing facility in Evansville, in the city of Evansville. And they need to increase their TIF limit in order for that investment to occur. And the reason that I'm interested in it, again, it's not, Evansville is not in my Senate district, is that because of the halo effect, they, you know, soybean farmers will have a market a lot closer to market than they have now. We don't have any soybean processing facilities at all in the state of Wisconsin. A lot of those soybeans in the southern part of the state probably get shipped to Chicago. And so I'm looking forward to that investment. And I think the assembly is taking that up tomorrow. And, you know, strong. It passed 32-0 last week in the Senate. And that's good for agriculture. And I was happy to author that bill.
And some job opportunities, too, I would presume.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, so, you know, Tony has got, and I have got the ethanol plant up in Nisita, and I've also got Badger State Ethanol down in Monroe. And, you know, they buy a lot of corn from local farmers. You know, I don't know, like in Nisita and in Monroe, how many semis come in there every day, but it's a lot. And so, and they like to source their grain locally, you know, so because trucking is expensive. So anyway, so I think, you know, and that's had a tremendous impact on our grain farmers, you know, in those areas. And I think this is going to have a positive impact for our soybean farmers down the road.
Indeed.
So, well, you know, you think of CHS, I mean, a lot of people don't realize they have a large facility up in Superior. And now we can get this facility for soybeans here. It's also interesting, over the last several years, there's been a tremendous amount of investment in our ports along Prairie du Chien, also on Lake Michigan over the Milwaukee, a lot of investment in our ports so that we can get our commodities to market. Remember, we talked before about exports. You know, exports are still a way we can drive growth in our agricultural footprint. And with the soybean processing facility, that's going to be a big deal for our producers.
Will either of you have listening sessions coming up here in the near future?
I had one last Monday in Platteville. I did that with Representative Tony Kurtz. And I don't think I've got any on the calendar at this point, but there was it was interesting. And Travis, we talk about farming again. Travis Tranel made the comment last week. He said, you know, in farming, you need to be understand things about a mile wide and about an inch deep. You know, I think you've heard that comment before. So here's a list of the comments that Travis Tranel and I heard in Platteville last Monday. Broadband, rural schools,
sure.
Wind turbines, highway aids, federal funding, red flag laws, redistricting, transition to grass farming, shared revenue, arts funding, business licensing, producer-led watershed programs, abortion, illegal immigration, Medicaid expansion, child care, and mental health. So there's our list of topics, mile wide, and, you know, so anyway. So, and that's fairly typical, I think, when Tony and I have done listening sessions. You know, we hear a lot of different topics and, you know, so it's yeah, so anyway, yeah, good conversation last week with the people in Platteville.
All topics we've talked about here on the show.
We have,
absolutely.
Yes.
So keeps you hopping. You got to kind of know, you know, you got to wear a lot of hats, I think.
A lot of different hats and have really good staff, too. That's the other thing. Now, what I'd like to talk about, last week in the Assembly, the week before, in the Joint Finance Committee, we voted on four separate tax packages. I just want to reiterate, the state financially, we're doing very well. We have over $3 billion in our surplus. That's kind of our checkbook. And then we have $1.85 billion in the rainy day fund. That's kind of like our savings account. We also earn interest on that savings account. We earn about $7.5 million a month from our rainy day fund. That's going back into that rainy day fund. So the point on why we did these four different tax bills is we want to try to get some money back into our folks' pockets. You know, obviously with inflationary pressures, things like that, everybody could use a little bit more. And so there's four different bills. The governor has been very open to some of these. You know, one of those bills would expand the exclusion for somebody over the age of 65. So let's say if we had somebody, you know, working at Schreiber or Foremost and they retired, up to $75,000 of their retirement would be exempt from state income tax. For an average filer, that's about $1,500 a year they could save there. That's one bill. The governor said he's been open to looking at that. The other one would be expanding the child independent care expenses. Currently for a single child, that's up $3,000. We'd expand that up to $10,000. And if you got two kids, you know, the limit was $6,000. For two kids, that would go up to $20,000. Those two bills, the retirement one actually passed on a bipartisan vote in the Assembly last week. So did the child independent care. Those both passed the Assembly on bipartisan support. The other one would be the married couple credit. Right now, that's been kind of capped at $490. And has not been adjusted for inflation at all. So, but just adjusting that inflation would be moving that credit up to $870. You know, for an average filer, that's on about another $400 a year they could see in savings. And then last but not least, something that we've talked about in the past was the second bracket. You know, people may not remember the governor in the budget. We had a provision to change the third and the fourth bracket. Change those numbers. Governor vetoed those. So this one, we would change the second bracket. And once again, that would, it covers a ton of people in our area. And that would also help people to get about $500 back every year that they would save on their taxes. So three bills all passed the Assembly. I know the Senate's going to be taking those up this week. And the goal would be to get those on the governor's desk. And he can pick and choose. I mean, I would love him to sign all those. But if he doesn't like one or the other, he can pick and choose which one he'd like to sign if he doesn't sign all four of them. So just trying to get money back. The state's taking in more money. It's your money. Let's get you a little money back.
Excellent. Good stuff, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming in today.
Good to be here.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. You have a great day.
You bet. See you in a month. State Senator Howard Markline and Representative Tony Kurtz on today's morning show.
Hi there, folks. This is John at Napa and Richland Center and Boscoville. It's that time of year to get your filters at unbelievable low prices. Whether you need filters for cars, trucks, mowers, industrial equipment, March 1st through the 15th is the time to get them. So get your list together now and come see us. Also, great pricing on hydraulic oil and greases. We have a full line of Milwaukee tools on hand and at great prices. Stop in today and check us out. Always free popcorn. We appreciate your business and look forward to seeing you soon.
This is Mark Jelenic of the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service. As seasons in our lives change, so do our final wishes and plans of how we intend to financially support our final wishes. We at the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service are here to assist you in reviewing your current life insurance policies and to assist you in protecting your life insurance policies to fulfill your final wishes. If you do not currently have a written or financial plan in place, we will be glad to assist you in setting up a guaranteed financial plan to fulfill your final wishes, whatever they may be.
Hillsboro Equipment sells outdoor power equipment, services outdoor power equipment, and takes care of the people who depend on their outdoor power equipment. With an 11,000 square foot shop, over $1 million in parts, and multiple trained technicians, Hillsboro Equipment will get you tuned up and ready to go. From the combines in the field to the lawnmower and chainsaw in your yard, they service it all, any make, any model. See the service experts at Hillsboro Equipment or call 489-2275.
Gunderson Boscobel Area Hospital and Clinics proudly welcomes family nurse practitioner Karen Lomas to our growing primary care team. With local roots and a diverse nursing background, Karen is passionate about helping patients reach their health goals through personalized care and support. Visits with Karen include wellness exams, women's health, acute illnesses, and management of chronic medical conditions. To schedule an appointment with Karen, call Gunderson Boscobel today.
Riverdale Ag is here to serve your cropping needs. They offer a full line of crop protection products along with dry and liquid fertilizers. Dave and his prompt professional staff offer feed, seed, fertilizer, chemical, grain elevator, and application. Partnering with farmers since 1983, Riverdale Ag Service is Southwest Wisconsin's whole farm supplier. Farmers that are shopping around for fertilizer in these times need to give Riverdale Ag a call for competitive pricing and great service. 739-3103.
Sunshine and Giggles has the philosophy that children learn through play. Sunshine and Giggles staff will strive to develop a stimulating, inviting classroom atmosphere in which children are free to explore and learn at their own pace. Sunshine and Giggles.